Welcome to the September 5th, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. All five commissioners are present, and our staff present today is General Manager Kirk Hudson, Clerk of the Board Rebecca Newman, and standing in a most pristine way, I might add, for our General Counsel is Daniel Apple. He's upgraded on the dress code. I just wanted everybody to notice that. Now, I know I promised that last week that this was not the new standard, but we liked it so much, so maybe it will become the new standard. So, anyway.
You're putting a lot of pressure on me.
I would ask that you check your electronic devices to make sure that they're placed in the silent mode to assist in not disrupting today's meeting. We do value public's input at our meetings and will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session and at the end of the afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record as our meetings are recorded, and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. We additionally ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Additionally, if you wish to speak to any items on the agenda today, I'll provide an opportunity at the end of each segment. Our flag salute and safety minute will be brought to us today by Lacey Stockton, who introduced herself to me as the new Susan Gillen. She's only been here 3.5 years, and we haven't met before. So I'm looking forward to getting to know you, Lacey. So you're on.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Where should I be?
Microphone right there. You can be standing or sitting.
Or you can sit at the table.
I don't know if I can.
It's on.
It's on. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I can follow up to all the jokes I've heard so far. I'm going to talk about something that is not a joke.
Ooh.
Wildfire smoke.
Ah.
Yes. So no one loves wildfire smoke, but no one really takes it very seriously. It's sort of, you know, folks, they'll still go outside. They'll still mill about. They won't change over their heating or cooling systems or their ventilation at all. They'll just kind of complain about stuff. And actually, that's not an effective strategy for dealing with smoke. It's sort of like complaining about asbestos and saying, I've got strong lungs. Eventually, even if you don't have acute symptoms, I'm told that you can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease and lung cancer. Woo! So what do? Well, the first thing that you do is you, if you're going to go outside, you can find one of these. I found this down in our warehouse. It's a KN95. Pop this guy on. It looks really cool. You can you can remember 3 years ago and all the fights we had about these, but you get to protect your lungs, which is pretty good, because what wildfire smoke is releasing are teeny tiny particles that are so small they go into your lungs, into your bloodstream, and then they wreak havoc. So that's how small they are. So when you look at the air quality, they're measuring PM2.5. Those are the tiny little guys that go into your bloodstream. Not ideal. The other thing is our team gets really excited about air filters. Changing your air filters is really good for energy efficiency. It's also a really good idea to have MERV 13 filters, which are the ones that filter out those teeny, tiny little particles, and to turn your fan on just continuously. Even if you don't need AC or heating, just like pop a MERV 13 in there and set your fan on until the smoke clears. And if it's really bad, like a couple weeks ago, we had a couple days, my MERV 13 filled up in 3 days, and I had to swap it out. Yeah, a lot of funk. Don't breathe it in. Are there any questions about wildfire smoke?
How do you know your filter was
full? Yeah, you go and visually inspect it. The best is to like slide out your filter and then hold it up to the light, because a lot of those small particulates, they don't look like dust. But you can tell where, compared with the outside of your filter, you can tell where the light can no longer penetrate. And if it looks that bad, you probably need to swap it out. Or you can go over to your registers and if there's not much air blowing, or if your air filter is now a balloon because air is trying to pass through and it's deformed, that's a good sign that you need to change your air filter. Yeah. And if you want to learn more, 2 years ago now on the Power Hour, which was our live stream Q&A with our team, we did a whole piece on smoke with an epidemiologist from the Washington State Department of Health. And he was great in answering all of the customer questions. So you can check that out.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, you're welcome.
So tell us about you.
Yeah. So I work for the Customer Energy Solutions team. Not to be confused with conservation. Okay? We're not the conservation team. We're Customer Energy Solutions because Andrew and I do so much more than conservation. We also do electric vehicles, battery storage. What else do we do? Demand response. That's true. Yep. Shaving Peak. We work under Sean's energy resources team because conservation is an energy resource. You don't waste it. You've just generated power. And so it's in our IRP and other planning tools as well. My time right now is mostly spent on a giant 13-foot by 7-foot touchscreen that is going into our lobby. So when you go in the vestibule and you look right, there's some conference room windows and a giant wall. That's going to be a big pokey screen about our really cool programs. And yes, there is a season for wildfire smoke, in case you want to learn more.
And low income.
Cool.
Yes, and low income programs. Thank you.
Wow. Lacey's been a key part of our customer experience approach to the new building. She's taken on an active role in being part of that and leading that effort, case in point with the big display that she's putting together and some other things that the customers will experience a different feel when they walk into that new lobby.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Is the next board meeting there?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, two months.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Two meetings.
Run the countdown. So excited. Yep. Good to see you there. Yeah. Awesome.
So I'm still curious about, you know, where'd you come from?
Well, did you hatch? Yeah. So I'm from Washington. I grew up in Edmonds.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I took a hiatus where I worked in South American tourism. Then I lived in Quebec for 8 years. I'm a mechanical engineer as well as a marketer, which is an odd combination unless you realize that all marketing is just data on you all. So yeah, it gets creepy.
Now I'm scared.
So how I came to Chalampiut is I used to be a consultant to Andrew's team. We did work on program evaluations as well as low-income needs assessments, trying to identify the energy burden in Chelan County. And then my team poached me.
Cool. Yeah. They did a good job.
Thank you all for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stacey.
I feel like you might be on stage on occasion. like the Follies. Or
how I roll.
Okay, commissioners, next item is the approval of the agenda. There haven't been any recommended changes. Everything look okay in your eyes. Hearing no comments, we will approve the agenda as presented and move on to item 3, quarterly electric growth load growth update. Man, I stumbled on that one.
Can I borrow your time?
Right, you are underdressed.
No, I really do. Good morning, Commissioner. Awesome to see you all here.
Good morning, Chad Rissman.
We are here for the electrical quarterly load update, and it seems like we were just here, and the fact is we were, but we're trying to get back on a schedule, on our routine schedule, so thanks to Rebecca, we were able to get back on pace to help meet our balanced scorecard goals. So let's see. To introduce myself, I'm Andy Wendell, the Director of Customer Service, and my colleague, Chad.
Director of Asset Management, Distribution Engineering.
Okay, so today Nothing earth-shattering in this update, although we did publish a new electric load forecast, so we'll spend a little bit more time on that today. As always, we talk about the total number of meters, new electric meters, year-to-date. We'll give you that update on that forecast, and we like to always bring those new inquiries and applications of folks needing new services. We'll talk a little bit about those. Chad will give us a good update on the substation build plan, and of course, no action is requested in this today. Information only, but we love to have your questions. The first slide here is the new electric meters going back to 2017 through 2023 year to date. Again, just as a reminder, the blue ones are the residential meters. The green are the commercial meters. And then the small amount of orange ones are industrial meters. You can see year to date for 2023, we're up to right at 268 new residential meters and 41 commercial meters with no new commercial meters. However, we are projected to be on pace with what we've seen in the last few years at 800 plus new residential meters. Just a note that we tend to get the majority of our meters energized in the towards the end of the third quarter, and certainly in the fourth quarter as winter is coming in, people are getting those services buttoned up for the year. So we'll see that number increase significantly between now and the end of the year. A few notable applications and inquiries. We've got the phase two of the Riverview Terrace. That's a new residential development, 45 lots out in the Malaga area. It's pretty significant for the Malaga area, and we have indications that we'll see more sizable developments in that Malaga area in the next 3 to 5 years. We've got the Hotel Majestic project, which is really kind of a short-term housing project down on the Mission Street here in Wenatchee. We do have an inquiry from the Beta Hatch company up in Kashmir. They're looking at expanding their services, and they're looking at feasibility of both increasing load at the existing location as well as looking at other locations as well. So that will be interesting. That'll be a fairly significant load for us. So wherever they end up landing, it'll be interesting to see, and we'll need to work with them closely on that. It's nice to see that business growing and expanding as well here in Chelan County. The Maple Street apartment complex, it's approximately 100 units, and that'll really come to fruition from a load standpoint later in 2024. We've talked last time about the amount of EV charging stations that we've been seeing, and again, we're continuing to see those. We have some fast chargers planned out in the old station near the Circle K or the new roundabout out there in Old Station, as well as Tesla superchargers up in the near Coles Corner area. That could present some challenges for us to serve that, and Chad's team is looking at that pretty closely. But if you look at those supercharger locations, they're starting to fill in the gaps between, you know, Wenatchee and the Seattle area. There's a hotel, La Quinta. It's about 129 unit new hotel behind the Safeway in Leavenworth. And finally, we're working with the Link Electric Bus Charging Station. Link is interested in doing some expansion of the bus services, which requires more charging infrastructure. There's consideration for large battery installation out there. So our team, including our Energy Solutions folks, are working on that application. It's likely to happen over a few phases. They need some infrastructure early for bus charging, but then they want to expand on that over the next 2 to 3 years. So that'll be a developing resource as we go forward.
So, Andy, before you advance, I just wanted to check with Karin and Kelly. There's one on here that I'm not certain how your familiarity level is with Beta Hatch. Mm-hmm. You are? Mm-hmm. Then, okay, good. Because, I mean, that's a fascinating one that, grow mealworms for food.
Yeah. Essentially, they have
an investor in them.
Oh, okay.
Side note.
Great. All right.
Because I got a spout.
Okay, we talk about this load forecast, and Chad and I present it each quarter, but I wanted to give you the background on kind of who the folks are that are actually doing all the work. So over on the left, there's the load forecast group. I'm starting with Daniel Scott and Hardy Thayer. They're the two distribution engineers. They're the ones that are focused on reliability of services as well as making sure there's capacity for the growth in our distribution system. They work under Chad's group, and they're big contributors to the load forecast team for sure. Their interest, of course, is in that peak load, making sure that we have the energy and the infrastructure to support that coldest day of the year. Becky Keating is in our energy planning and trading group. She puts together that IRP and participates on our load forecast team on a regular basis. She's been playing a more active role as some folks, such as Willard Fields, who is retired now, but he did help publish this latest one, so we wanted to make sure that he was recognized. But Becky is kind of filling his shoes a bit. Brett Hammond, strategic financial planning. Brett brings a really interesting perspective from a revenue standpoint on our retail customers, so it kind of helps validate what we're seeing from a forecast standpoint. And Jim White recently joined the team out of our customer energy solution. And as we know, electric vehicles, battery storage, distributed generation, those things are coming into reality now. And so we want to make sure those are baked into our load forecast as well. So we're really excited that Jim is part of that team as well. And then Kirk Carlson, I call him a utility economist, but he's in enterprise risk management, and he brings many years of experience to the load forecast team. Of course, there's myself and Chad. We act as advisors to that team. And then we bring in Lindsay Mons, who is close to some of our large energy contracts and contracts such as the Diamond Foundry. So she adds a lot of value to that as well. So it's a comprehensive team, and it spans across multiple business lines in the organization. It's a fun team, and it's if you think engineers and analysts are boring people, they're not. That's a lot of fun in that group every time we get together. So happy to be part of that team. Okay, so this was the latest forecast that our team put out. We look back about a year over that, and you can see that we're focusing on that base case. We do have a high case and a low case. And our base case for September of 2023, actually it was published in August of 2023, is about 32 average megawatts or 1.4% growth over the next 10 years. So again, that's 32 megawatts over the next 10 years is what we would anticipate growing from a base standpoint. Just note that that is net of energy conservation. So after our groups have captured all the energy conservation opportunities, this is net of that. Another point of interest is these forecasts do exclude those new large contracts, such as what we may see in Malaga for the Microsoft or off-sales large contracts as well. This is primarily our retail customers, commercial, industrial, and residential. On our high case, we're at about 53.2 average megawatts. That's come down significantly from April of last year. That's primarily our confidence around those new large loads coming through, like the cryptocurrency spectrums have really settled out. We're not getting those applications and inquiries at near the pace that we were even just a year ago. So we have much more confidence that those loads aren't going to sneak in on us for sure. And then our low forecast is around 13.3 average megawatts. And that's primarily representative if our housing market just kind of really slid off and people just stopped building completely. We'd probably dip down in that. So I think it's fair to say that our confidence level around the 32 average megawatts is pretty high right now in terms of a good forecast. Any questions on that before we move on?
Mm-hmm. I have one. As our load increases, that means that we're taking power that we normally sell on the wholesale market, and now we're converting it to domestic use. I guess we call it domestic use here. do we have any kind of a forecast of what that revenue stream going to look like as it changes? You know, because we're going to have this, and we're going to actually be selling it to the residential at a subsidized rate. So, do we know what that's like, or
yeah,
or the return?
This team doesn't really look at the revenue forecast, but I'm certain that folks are looking at.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Kelly does, and I would like to have that information if that's possible. I mean, you don't have to do it now. You can send it to me, but here comes Kelly.
You got me curious, too.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I can do even better than that. The quarterly energy resources update that you just had. There's the really great stacked bar graph in that presentation, and it shows the components of each of the revenue forecasts. And it takes that long-term look. And so when you look at that, you'll see the shifting between the different kind of components of our revenue stream. So it's a great one to look at and get that information. I think you'll have it at your fingertips.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm sure it's there. Sorry.
Thank you, Kelly.
I might just mention there's all these components and these forecasts kind of all come together within different groups. And that's why we have different diversity within the load forecast group, because that's an input into some of these things, right? So where do we need to be in terms of energy? There's another, that's an input that goes into infrastructure forecasting. I was going to talk a little bit about that on the substation side. So do we have the infrastructure in place, or do we need to build additional infrastructure in order to meet those capacity requirements? So these are all things that are kind of related, conservation's related, the revenue forecast, what we have in terms of resources, our capacity planning. It's kind of fun that they're all sort of related. And that's a big part of the discussion that this group has in these meetings that Andy was talking about. I don't know if it's fun, but I have fun doing it.
No.
There's so many variables.
Yeah, I was just curious. I mean, if we have a strategy moving forward, how we adjust with all of this as we move forward, is there a way to minimize that? Or is it just something we're going to be dealing with in the future?
I would just add to Chad's point too, that, you know, if this number were much higher, we would have to start adjusting our marketing strategy too. And that's why we have the slice contracts that generally roll off to allow us to adapt for a higher load forecast. So I thought Chad made a great point of there's a lot of moving pieces that all work together and to make this actually work. So
thank you.
Yeah.
One other point I'd like to make is that you can see we say 32 average megawatts, right? That's average energy over that 10 years. There is another important point. We don't publish the forecast on it, but it's the peak demand, which is significantly different than the average. The peak demand, of course, that information is being fed to these engineers, and from an infrastructure standpoint, that's what we're building that infrastructure to, is that peak demand, which is fair to say it's a much higher number than our average energy here.
About double.
Yeah.
But for short periods of time.
Do we anticipate that peak moving much in this growth period?
One of the topics of discussion with this group is the differences over time between the energy growth side and the peak side. So there's various things that are happening within our service area and how customers are utilizing energy, things like battery storage, things like solar, things like EVs. Those are all changing the load profiles, which is evolving the amount of infrastructure that we need to install. So we're watching that really close and trying to understand what that's looking like. It used to be in the olden days, you'd be able to predict how much energy and how much capacity you need. But because of the way the energy is being used these days and how that's evolving, the differences between energy growth and capacity growth are different. And so that's causing a lot of discussions. So basically how people are using power these days is different.
Hi, Sean Smith. One of the other components you'll see down in the future is the demand response studies we're doing right now. And that we'll hit right on Chad's, that peak, and, you know, sawing off that top of that peak will be really critical going forward, both from a market perspective and for, you know, infrastructure perspective. So that's why, you know, you saw Lacey here and you'll see Andrew later, and that group will be more and more important as we go out into the future.
Well, I just would think that, you know, as we move forward on that, historical data is not going to be really relevant anymore. We're going to have to, you know, predict and make those assumptions moving forward, which causes a little more risk, because we really don't know what that's going to be. But we certainly, in my view, need to prepare for that. And you know, what you guys need to do, we need to be all together on that. Because it can end up being a critical, my view again, a critical situation if we're not prepared. So
yeah, we've already started that process, and you've seen like the 40,000 car EV study that Jim White did, who was in this group and looked at those impacts. And then we're also doing a fleet electrification study. So we're really starting, and we're doing a demand response consultant also. So we've got multiple processes going in place.
Okay, thank you.
And I would think that this is not unique to us. The industry as a whole is really anticipating this increase in the change in demands. You guys have some great partners that you connect with. In that.
We have some very interesting characteristics here in Chelan County, partly driven by the price of power. There's very little gas, partly driven by our climate. Also partly driven by second homes and short-term vacation things. So there's a characteristics of our system that are really quite interesting. Because we have very little gas, we're winter peaking. And when we're looking at the EV studies, the EV things for the rest of the country, most of the country, is summer peaking. And summer peaking, that's heat or air conditioning load, which is occurring late in the afternoon is when the peaks are. That's interesting for us because our peaks are actually early in the mornings during the wintertime. So when you look at adding things like EVs, EVs are charging in the afternoons, at least that's what the data is telling us and some of the studies are telling us. For us, that potentially is an opportunity. It's different. Because our system peak is designed for the wintertime at 7:30 in the morning-ish, and that's when our system's designed. So if you're adding those loads in some of off-peak times from an infrastructure standpoint, not from an energy standpoint, but from an infrastructure standpoint, that drives some decision-making and potentially presents some opportunities. So there are some very fun characteristics about our system and about our customer base and make it some unique features.
Mm-hmm. And we get to learn a little bit too, because EV adoption's a lot stronger in other parts of the country. And so we have a very slow uptake right now in EVs, but it will be coming. So we get to learn from some of the other utilities because of our slow number of EVs. We only have about 800 in the county right now.
Sean, I'm curious about that. Maybe that's a topic for later. But I really am curious why we're not growing faster with that when our costs are lower. I would think people would be jumping on board with that faster. Or is that exactly the reason why the cost is higher in other areas, so they're looking at? Or is it multiple?
I think it's multiple reasons. We are fairly remote, you know, and so we do have Tesla chargers in town. We still haven't seen. If people want to go up, you know, towards Lake Chelan, you go past Lake Chelan, there aren't many chargers there yet. So as the charging network gets built out, you'll see that. We're still, you know, I just think we're going to be a little bit slower adopters that you can. There are a number of theories out there, but we're just looking at the actual numbers and seeing not a huge uptake. Yes, but we are planning for it because, like you, we see our price is extremely low. And so when people can fill up in their garage, the range gets to a you know, to an amount that they can go pretty much anywhere. And the cost is very low, especially with cars, too. Cars are currently a little more expensive. They're starting to come down in price. That's another reason. We've seen a lot of trucks starting to be released, and so we have a lot of trucks in town, and so we'll see how those how those go.
Just curious.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for letting us totally.
All good.
I'm learning something. Yeah.
Presentation. Before we close on the load forecast, I just want to let you know we meet, this team meets essentially quarterly. Every year, we don't publish a new forecast quarterly. We report on it, like we're doing today. But we generally publish, you know, once a year. But the team meets, and if there's any anomalies that are coming in, any new big applications or anything that's changing immediately, this team is gathering together even outside of our quarterly update. So just wanted you to know that there's a lot of people watching this, you know, throughout the year and exchanging information and responding and doing what we can to forecast that. I know we're attempting to do more in terms of engaging our development community, the municipalities, the county, to try to understand what they are forecasting as well. So it's a constant effort, and we're doing our best to stay on top of it. So.
Nicely done.
A few things I like to do throughout the years, just kind of try to reach outside our anecdotal data here at the PUD and find out what's going on, you know, on the outside. So I pulled a couple stats kind of in the residential development side of things. Example, that photo on the screen is the Sky Ridge or the Triad development end of Maple Street. And we had forecasted that to be about 50% full, which would be about 150 residential homes. We had forecasted that to happen now. And as you can see, I took that photo last week, and there's two homes being built in there right now. So that's just an indication. There's other developments that are in similarly situated in terms of build-out, and it's just a bit slower. And trying to understand that. I think there's various reasons, everything from supply chain to labor shortages to, you know, influences on the housing market as well. Here's a couple of stats down below. The median home sold compared to nearby counties. You can see Chelan County down there on the bottom. In July of 22, we were at median value of $558,000, and looks like that's dropped down almost 4% to $538,000, something like that. Maybe an indication that a little bit of a slowing in that market as well. Number of homes sold in June of 22, 96 compared to July of 2023 is 73, so about 24% reduction. And even the days on the market are increasing year-to-date. So those are just small indicators that things might maybe slowing down a little bit. We primarily get our information through our engineers who are working with those developers side-to-side, looking at the various phases and that. And most of these developments come out in, you know, two, three, or four-phase developments. And they're giving us information that they'll be hedging on some of those later phases, the threes. There's still some hot pockets in the area. I mean, in places that really haven't slowed down. Manson is one of those areas that just continues to grow at a pace that's unbelievable. But we're keeping a close eye on the entire county from that perspective.
And we've got that area scheduled for a new substation.
That's right. Yeah, I can talk a little bit more about that here. Last statistic here, I just want to let you know this is not people moving in or out. This is an actual data on moving out. This is some stats put out by Redfin of people that are inquiring about houses from various areas of the country. Okay, so folks inquiring about purchasing homes in the Wenatchee area. You can see on the left-hand side, Seattle is our biggest customer over there, just over 1,700 homes. That's no surprise to anybody. We meet new retirees or new folks coming here to live and work from Seattle all the time. New Orleans caught me off by surprise there at 73. I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
Maybe we get a Cajun restaurant.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, right. Exactly. Gumbo shrimp, right. And then so on down the list. Interesting, there's definitely a lot of inquiries about moving to the area, for sure. And then the outbound traffic, like Spokane, Phoenix, and Las Vegas are in the top three there. And certainly understand the Phoenix, Las Vegas, and Los Angeles from a warmer climate standpoint. But, just an interesting stat there. Yeah. I'm going to turn it over to Chad on the substations.
Yeah, so just shifting gears a little bit over to substations. Commissioner McKenna mentioned this. Illustration that we just like to pop into the slideshow a little bit shows approximate location of existing substations. Substations is, besides transmission, one of the longer, bigger capital build portions of maintaining capacity in the distribution system. So a lot of focus in on that. We build substations in about 30 megawatt blocks, right? So our standard substation is 30 megawatts. Our planning standards is to start looking for a site and start doing some planning when a substation, adjacent substation, reaches about 80%. So we tried to put a radar out there a long ways. Commissioner Smith pointed out that we've got some substations that are out there a long ways, and we'll get to that list. One thing I know for sure is we're probably going to be wrong. They are stations that we want to put on the radar. Not actually sure when they're going to be needed. Pretty sure they will be needed. It just depends on what the growth is in the area. And it's not only growth. So one of the things that's going on in Manson that we find really fascinating is the Chelan area and Leavenworth, Lake Wenatchee is a portion of that too. It used to be second homes. Because of a number of things, I'm guessing great fiber service, work from home, COVID things, VRBOs, short-term rentals, those are looking like full-time residences now. So we're not actually getting growth, but it looks like growth. It's just our energy is being used more frequently, and those homes are being occupied more frequently. And so some of our previous assumptions about how people were going to be using energy in some of those areas are wrong. So we built certain infrastructure and planned for certain infrastructure 10, 15, 20 years ago, and those assumptions are no longer correct because of the things that are changing. So it's fun. It's interesting, but it is always evolving. It's not static. So we try to keep up with what's actually going on, which is one of the main purposes for this load growth group. So the ones that you see in red there are future locations where we'll be interested in spinning up at some point in time, seeking a site and a location. There's a lot of interest in that topic with our community and with our customers. We have to make sure that we've got the correct amount of infrastructure to be able to serve for reliable reasons, but it's also infrastructure that oftentimes is folks aren't interested in that in their area, right? So there's a lot of there's a lot of coordination, communication, and collaboration that goes into selecting the right site. And we've got a pretty decent process that we've found that seems to be working okay. But those are future areas where we'll be looking for sites. The ones in the yellow are locations where we're monitoring and watching. Some of them are in build right now where we have sites. So just a neat little illustration that Andy first came up with, so appreciate that, Andy.
So if you managed to figure out what the invisible substation looks like now?
Looking around to other areas, they're getting closer and closer to that. Substations inside buildings, substations underneath parks, substations where they've demolished a school, built a substation underneath it, and then rebuilt the school over top the substation.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very interesting and creative things that are happening. The gas insulated substations, so you can make them quite small. Those are some very interesting things that folks are doing when they're constrained, when they have a lot of constraints. So, yeah.
Yep.
question.
Ken? Yeah.
Can you explain to me the Chewaucum triangle area there, what that means with the, like, the three substations there? Help me with that.
Yeah, sorry. Some of the gray words are meant to be areas or municipalities or towns or communities. Mm-hmm. So what's happening there with the yellow, that's Coles Corner, where a number of the transmission lines are kind of coming together. So coming out of Leavenworth, and then the transmission line that goes over the pass that goes through Merritt, that's the McKenzie-Beverly line that we usually refer to. The taps that are coming off of there in that Chewaucum area, which is really Coles Corner, that's a plain tap, and the Lake Wenatchee tap for the transmission lines that are going out to those substations. So it's a little jumbled up in the illustration there. So hopefully that makes sense.
Yep. Thank you.
Is there an area or two that you have as priority for the future seeking?
Yeah, I've got that in a couple slides coming up. So I hope that you won't hold me accountable for the exact dates. But we definitely have some that are sooner than later. And so we're spinning up teams to start looking at some of the areas that we feel like are sooner than later. There's some great examples out there, too. We with the board support, sought for property, Okanagan substation, and also Castle Rock substation, because we knew that growth was going to require two substations in those areas. And because of the way that things grew, we ended up building Okanagan first, which took pressure off building Castle Rock substation. So better than 15 years, we had that property. The district has owned property there and have plans for a future substation. So those are areas where we were monitoring growth. We were watching what was going on. It looked like there was going to be a lot of growth that was occurring, and some didn't happen the way that we expected it to. And so we're still holding on to the site, or recommending that the site, we hold on to the site so that we build a future substation there. But growth in that immediate area will determine when we build the substation.
I just, in one of my conversations with someone, we talked about, you know, as we look out for future sites that we have expandability, like you said, you have a future place that you're going to have, that not necessarily going to build a substation today, but the opportunity is today to get it. 10 years from now, it may be gone. And so, it's important that we look into the future far enough. One of the solutions was we're going to acquire more land. We don't need the whole land for a substation, but we can build additional expansion on it. Now, are there any, roadblocks in doing that moving forward? I mean, are we all working together on that? Or what hurdles do we have to overcome in order to do that kind of a thing? Do we need to work with the county, you know, that sort of thing? What needs to be done, and what can we do to help?
Providing the support and guidance as you have and as you are right now, that we want to be looking at opportunities or where we've got a high level of confidence that we're going to need some additional infrastructure to try to secure those sooner than later, and giving us time to be able to work with the community and find the right site, work with the community, work with the board, and find the right location and the right site. So thank you for that guidance, and appreciate the support to be able to move on that. We don't want to secure or build things that be stranded capacity, right? So we want to make sure that we're doing that in a smart way. But there are opportunities that do come up. There's an example that we're going to be moving on here very shortly at Wenatchee Substation, that we're going to be expanding that from a 33 megawatt to a 56 megawatt station with two power transformers. And as a part of that, purchased some adjacent property and worked with several key stakeholders. So there's examples where we've expanded some stations where that makes sense, where we recommended. So appreciate the guidance.
Well, where we have extra land, let's say you got a 2-acre piece of property that you're going to put a substation on, and then so, but you don't need all of that. I know that there's some interest in, well, can we make the remaining property a park, or, you know, something that's nice looking while we're moving forward, is there any obstacles in doing that moving forward with pieces of property like that?
I don't think so. I think be based on
we have
guidance.
The authority, I guess, to do that.
I would just jump in here and say that when it comes to parks, we can do parks as long as they're required by a FERC under a FERC license.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we don't have just general authority to create parks. We could work potentially with, you know, other community members, cities, counties, but we don't have the authority to just.
So that's something we could work with the county in order to achieve.
Certainly, we could work with the county. Yes.
Okay.
And we do go through a conditional use permitting process with the county or the municipalities that we're building in, and generally landscaping and secondary use, parking, what have you, is all part of that conversation. So.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up, it makes it more palatable for the residents that have a community, and you know, okay, here's a substation. What are you going to do with this other acre of land? And then you have maybe something that that fits in with the community, and they're going to go, well, okay, well. More palatable.
Yep. The Plain substation is an example of that, where looking for parking and access to the river community was, and there was extra property there, so you know, there were some partnerships that were made there. The Bavarian substation, the board has earmarked some funding to be able to do some blending features for Bavarian substation that's on Castle Rock. So we were in communications with several groups that are interested in doing some things that would be more for blending, maybe just accents that help support some of the local things, like maybe some trails or parts of trails or something like that, that we might be able to blend that doesn't move us out of what our primary objectives are of building and maintaining utility infrastructure, but also recognizes that there's a blending opportunity there. North Shore substation, I think you've seen some of these. I'll flip through some of this quickly, but if you haven't had an opportunity to go and look at this, it's changed quite a bit just over in the last few weeks. Lot going on there. We've got the power transformer in there. The busing's up. The transmission line has been modified. The new transmission poles you can kind of see in the background up there up on the hill. There's a couple of excavators that are up there. New transmission poles are already set. They're digging the holes for those now, so to bring the transmission line, tap that existing line and bring it down into the station. One key component of this that has been delayed out until November is the control building, and the control building houses the breakers and a lot of the relaying, and it's kind of the brain of the substation. That's not coming until November, so we've got a little bit of a gap here. So we'll be commissioning the latter part of this year and into the first part of next year. But that's not going to slow us down into some other things, some other stations that we'll talk about next. There's a lot of work that's going on around the station right now to bring the circuits in and out of the station and tie those into the existing distribution system. There's a fair amount of excavating and vault installation and conduit installation that's going on. This is a list we're trying to maintain. Commissioner Smith pointed out that the Cashmere substation is out in 2037. Some of these stations that are out there pretty far, they're on our radar. We understand that there's additional capacity that's going to be needed in that area, but it's going to really be dependent on growth. And so we're just keeping those on the radar. To point two about locating and identifying the potential sites early as possible, so we're maintaining an understanding on this list of whether or not we have located a site and acquired property for the site, so we can look at moving on those sooner than later. Like I said, our team's got a lot more confidence in a substation being needed and where it's going to be needed. We have less confidence in the when side of that. First few stations I have a lot more confidence in. In fact, we've got teams that are moving on those. One of them that's an exception to that is Roses, and I'll talk about that. I'll talk about where we're at with several of these stations right now. But this is just a comprehensive list that we're trying to manage and monitor. There's only so much of this work we have the current capability of doing. So we want to make sure that something doesn't happen way out into the future where a bow wave potentially would be coming, and we wouldn't be able to see that bow wave, so we could build the capabilities to do more of these if we saw a bow wave coming. So we want to make sure that we've got the capabilities to be able to build what we need to build or what we're forecasting to need to be built. So diving into the first few of those on that list and where we've got current actions that are going on. We mentioned North Shore. I talked a little bit about that. Bavarian and Wenatchee, we're in the final stages of permitting. We're going to be submitting those permits very soon to state and local. Conditional use permit is one of those. So the permitting team is about to deliver on both of those, which will have an idea of what comes back from the permitting towards the end of the year, and we'll start in design and construction procurement starting next year. Wenatchee Foothills, we're working with the community and the property owners there around Springwater Street. The tree fruit research, WSU's tree fruit research, and in conversations with them about the possibility of locating a substation. We hope to be in a spot where we've narrowed down sites and got some recommendations between the community, the property owners, and us. So we'll hope to be able to bring some things forward towards the end of the year coming forward with some recommendations there. Roses, we talked about Manson, so Roses is meant to be Roses Lake. We're going to need additional substation capacity in that Manson area. And so we're looking at transmission infrastructure that potentially could be needed to be able to site a substation in that area. So we're just about to spin up a team here in the next few weeks to start looking preliminarily at the feasibility of something in that area. So last winter, we saw a lot of the circuits in the Manson area exceed our expectations in terms of the energy usage. And so we're moving up on the schedule, Roses, and see if we can't identify some potential locations. Little peek preview in the next couple of board meetings. We've got a contract that we established in 2018 for power transformers to purchase up to 7 power transformers. We've purchased 3, 1 for North Shore, 2 for OMI. There's 4 more left on there that we'll have the ability, according to the contract, to be able to purchase, but we need to bring some things to the board on that. So we're going to be recommending a schedule and when to purchase those transformers. Their delivery dates are moving out quite a way, so we'd like to bring forward, moving forward on those. Those 4 power transformers will be one for Plains Substation is telling us it needs to be replaced because of conditional reasons. Then we've got a Bavarian Substation and the 2 for Wenatchee Substation that we talked about. So those are the 4, and that will exhaust that contract, and we'll be looking at going out. There's rumors that right now we're about a year, a little more a year under this current contract. What we're hearing, new contracts is 2 to 3+ years out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Does that mean we're already potentially behind on our orders?
Our current contract, we are not. So we'll be able to fulfill the stations that we're looking at currently. So what we'll be looking at is future substation sites. I don't think so. Based on where we're at in our planning and construction build and our capacity, I think we're okay.
But it is an example. If we don't act now, though, we could find ourselves in a spot where we are behind.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Chad. Well, just wrapping up, we can summarize by saying that residential construction remains relatively steady, but we're seeing some indications of a slight slower build pace here in Chelan County. We're forecasting our average 800 plus new electric meters for the year. Charging stations, EV charging stations continues to evolve for us. Even with these slight indications of changes, we're not advocating any change in our substation build plans. As Chad's indicated, that's a long-term game for us. And we believe that the utility infrastructure across the board, water, wastewater, electric, and fiber, are positioned well to meet our customers' needs in the future. So we're in good shape.
Well, there's been a lot of outages up and around Plain and Lake Wenatchee area. It seems like there's always something going on up there. I've been monitoring the outages, and we all have. And so is there a particular reason for that? I know the customers up there are getting kind of concerned, but you know, it's the dependability and reliability is not what it has been. So is there a main cause for that, or is it just, you know, freakier?
Wildland fire mitigation, we've increased the sensitivity in those areas.
Okay.
And so things that would normally be a temporary outage are the power is turning off and staying off until they can be inspected.
Okay.
For fire danger and fire risk. We have some projects in place right now that we're moving forward on. We hope to improve that, where we're going to be able to keep the sensitivity for wildland fire mitigation, but to hold our hope based on the studies that we've done, that we're going to be able to recover some of the reliability. So we're going to be putting electronic devices out there and be able to switch back and forth to the higher and lower sensitivity options within by the press of a button.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's a manual process.
Right.
So it takes us quite a while to get into that state.
So
and
what are we doing then as far as response time to those outages? Or have we done any kind of have we changed our strategy about that now? Because, you know, are they out for an hour or out for half an hour? How do we respond to that in a more quicker way, I guess?
I can say this. I know Chad probably has some thoughts on this too. But with our advanced metering system, we're made aware of an interruption in service to any meter much sooner than we would be otherwise. Without the AMI meters, we were dependent on a phone call generally by the customer to let us know they're out of service. So we've already witnessed that the AMI system being able to automatically send a message to our operations center, there's an interruption service at one or multiple meters, has increased response time. And that will improve as we start matching that up with our electric system, where we can essentially look at a group of meters that are out and triangulate where that probable failure point is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on the horizon, but that should improve our response time.
Well, where does our manpower personnel mm-hmm. come from in order to respond to something in Lake Wenatchee area? Did mm-hmm. they have to be dispatched from Wenatchee, or are they local? Or how do we?
We do have a serviceman in the Leavenworth area. As a first responder, that's correct. However, depending on the time of the day and the extent of the outage, we may be dispatching people out from wherever we can get them, right? If it's in the middle of the night, we have a process to call out crews and dispatch them to the location, whether it's Chelan, Wenatchee, or in the Upper Valley area. For Leavenworth, a lot of the crews during off hours are dispatched out of the Wenatchee area. We don't have crews reporting directly to the Leavenworth office.
Yeah, so when we response out of Wenatchee, that increases the response time to deal with the
It may at times. It may at times. I know we've looked at that in the past. I would have to visit with our operations manager to understand if there's any latency or any indications there's latency in response times today.
Okay. I think the key driver here is that these faults used to be, most of them, I don't know what percentage, but these faults that are happening are, there's a historical track record of these faults, and they historically used to be temporary because we'd operate the system such that it would close back in. And the big driver here on the increasing length of outages is those aren't temporary anymore. Those we don't allow the system to operate that way because it could start a fire.
Right.
And so the crews now have to respond, and they have to patrol, and they have to make sure there's not a tree hung up in the line before they can re-energize. And so that's the driver behind the increasing length of outage. Even the response time, I'll say, even when we had a crew stationed up in Leavenworth, it was not uncommon. It was very common that a crew from Wenatchee would respond in the after hours. So the big driver for these increased outages is the operational protocol that we've established to reduce fire risk. And we've started expanding that protocol beyond Plain and Lake Wenatchee to other areas.
Mm-hmm. Clockham, Stamen Flat, Chelan.
So we're trying to... I'd say we're one of the few utilities, and I know this because I attended a wildfire conference and spoke at it. We're one of the few utilities that are trying to take the next step that Chad's really talking about, which is how do you reduce fire risk at the same time try and improve reliability, and looking at these different operating regimes and how we operate the equipment, how we can go in and out of that. Right now it's seasonal. We do it on a seasonal basis, but we could go in and out of that depending on the automation capabilities and the weather forecasts that would allow us to change that throughout the summer season when the risk is high. So I think we've got a lot of work to do. It's definitely one of the things we're concerned about is how do we, because we have seen the impact on reliability.
Yeah, so it's on a kind of high on the priority.
It is, okay. Yeah, to try and they've got a whole plan put in place over the next several years to try and make those improvements, incremental improvements. Okay. Try it, test it, see how it goes, and go from there. But I will say the wildfire risk is a big deal for utilities, yeah.
So I think our greatest opportunities is getting better information in the hands of our system operators and our responders. Where is it? And trying to get them located there as fast as possible. So getting more information in their hands is where our greatest opportunity is. So we've started some of those innovative and technology improvements, and there'll be several more years of those things coming.
Well, if there aren't any more questions, Chad and I are going to head over to Macy's, see if there's a sale on ties.
I actually just wanted to make a comment. They do have nice ones, but
yeah.
I am super excited when you were talking about some of the innovation going in with the substations. Although it's creative thinking, it seems like such a great opportunity for recruiting, you know, some of these new engineers, or even talking to high schoolers about opportunity within the district and, you know, the cutting edge technology and really making, for lack of a better word, I was going to say sexy, but, you know, making it a very appealing career path to come here, you know, because all this new technology and new innovation is exciting. So thank you for change is tough for a lot of people, but I'm super excited to see our team embracing it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. The last couple of years, our summer intern in the engineering department has done the bulk of the R&D work for some of the changing around the ability to be able to change our settings remotely and how to program our existing devices. A big part of that R&D of that was guided by our engineers, but they were doing the heavy lifting on that. So it is kind of fun. So, yeah, those are opportunities that are there.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And happy tie shopping.
Okay, PURPA.
Okay, I'd like to call Andrew Grisell up.
Good morning. Andrew Grisell, manage our customer energy solutions team. Now, I am here to talk about setting a public hearing date for the Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act. Just as I had mentioned in the senior team review of this, super exciting stuff. Hold on to your seat. Just kidding. As you saw from the preview of the presentation, not a lot of pictures and a lot of words, which normally is not my style, but you sometimes have to get all the stuff in. So, good morning. What I'd like to do is provide a brief background. I have been here regarding this purpose standard prior to this. So I'll provide a little background on that. I want to talk about the staff recommendations and then discuss each standard in just a little bit more detail why staff proposes the recommendation and what we think of that. Of course, the outreach plan, it does require a public hearing, so we want to discuss that with the board as well. And then we can go through our next steps, which is also related to the outreach plan. So it's all kind of the same thing there. So background. So under the 1978 PURPA was amended by the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. This stated that utilities must consider start consideration standards associated with electric vehicles and demand response. Chelan PUD initiated that consideration last October with a presentation to the board talking about this. And then a determination on adopting the standards must be made by mid-November of this year. So that's why we're here now before you, make sure we hit that date. Just to let you everyone know, we've done this before. This isn't something new. There's several times where the original PURPA Act has been amended through various energy policy acts. We've had them in 92, 2005, again in 2007, and then, of course, the one most recently here in 2021. So this so there's two standards, and over the next couple slides, I'll just bring them up. One is an electric vehicle charging programs, and the primary purpose is really promote affordable, equitable electric vehicle charging options, improve customer experience, accelerate third-party investment, and then looking at appropriately recovering the marginal cost of delivering electricity to electric vehicles and charging infrastructure. All things we've been talking about and discussing within our own groups, even prior to this, things we've been looking at. And so that's really the electric vehicle standard. They're trying to get more electric vehicles on the road and help in more quickly. And there's also, oh, yes.
You're talking about recovering the marginal cost of delivering electricity. Now, under an electric vehicle rate, does it have to be at the same rate as the residential, or can it be a different rate that recovers distribution and the actual cost of generation?
That is a great question. And thank you. Leave it to, yeah, you could have separate rates. Like right now we have the DC fast charging rate,
yep,
which is specific to electric vehicle charging.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the actual cost of generation and distribution to the charging area.
Each home?
Does it have to be at a residential subsidized rate, or can we actually recover the actual cost of what it takes to deliver
Eric, energy? Thank you. I don't think so.
How about we do this? The board sets rates, Commissioner. Mm-hmm. So traditional rate making is based upon cost delivery. We do subsidize ours, enhance those, stand them up with the wholesale power revenues. Those decisions, all of them that you're speaking about, are up to the board.
Okay.
They could certainly be, and today are, different rates.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and then on top of that, just something to remember as we're looking through, there's the low carbon fuel standard credits, which we'll also be getting through that, and so that helps offset some of that as well. And those we're expecting to be in the 10-cent range. 10 cent per kilowatt hour range. And we'll talk more about that throughout the next few slides. Also, why our recommendation on the standard is, you'll see in the next slide or two, on adopting the standard. Demand response practices is also a standard they want the utilities to look at. They want to promote the use of demand response, flexibility practices within each of the different sectors. And then also, you know, look at establishing rate mechanisms for the recovery of the costs of promoting each of these things. And those are associated with what they're talking about in subparagraph A. Like I said, we'll go through these in a little more detail down through the rest of the presentation. The first staff recommendation. The staff recommends that adopting the new standards identified in the 2021 IIJA is not in the best interest of our customer owners. Not adopting the standards does not prevent the board from acting on them or any other actions at some later date. And by not adopting now, the board retains flexibility to consider standards in the future when staff learns more. I think we've mentioned a couple times we have some studies going on. That information will be useful and beneficial as the board considers future programs and future directions. The staff recommends not adopting the standards. First, a discussion of the standards for EVs. I'm taking these part by part, so you'll see the A, Bs, CDs for this. The first is to promote affordable and equitable electric vehicle charging options for residential, commercial, and public electric vehicle charging infrastructure. Chelan PUD already has a very low rate for our residential customers, and this equates to about 30 cents a gallon equivalent at home. And so that is, in and of itself, promoting affordable and equitable electric vehicle charging options. We're also participating in the Washington State Clean Fuels Program. That's the low carbon fuel standard that I just mentioned, which will also provide non-ratepayer funding for projects and programs that support charging options. And so we want to bring in those funds as well to, where those funds can also be brought in. And so that's one of the reasons why we feel we already have A, taken care of, or will be taken care of. Yes, Commissioner.
Are those funds designated now for certain types of projects, or can we designate them to residential customers in helping them adapt in this new era?
They can be used in a number of different ways. There are a portion of the funds, especially if the credits are generated off the residential side, a portion of those funds will need to be directed towards, I would say, low and moderate income customers. But there's a much larger portion of those funds where we could do something like that, where you could direct it towards residential customers, you could direct it towards additional infrastructure, you could direct it towards other areas. And
so I would think we would want to keep that in the realm of the residential area rather than a commercial type charging station somewhere. Yep. I don't think I'd be in favor of something like that, but as long as those dollars are kept locally with our own residents and ratepayers, I think that's a great deal. Yeah.
That's great feedback for us to have as we start looking at those things and as we start developing different ways with which those funds can be expended. So, mm-hmm. Yep. Second one is improve the customer experience associated with electric vehicle charging, including reducing electric charging times for light, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles. I'm going to take this in two parts. The first part is just customer experience as far as we've upgraded our website to assist customers with EV-related questions. We have an expert on staff, Jim White, who we direct customers to when they have questions, whether it's vehicles, charging, any of those sorts of things, especially at home. He's also been instrumental in working with the Link on the big projects that they've had, as Chad mentioned earlier, with the Link bus electrification. So, you know, we feel we're doing a good job in that area. Can we get better? Of course, but we've already taken steps to do those things. So the one with the reducing charging times is primarily accomplished by installing direct current fast chargers. There are several companies that already offer these charging services in Chelan County. We also saw two more from the prior presentation on load growth. Two more looking at it, looking at sites, looking at facilities. There are also several automakers have now announced their vehicles will use the leading car charging network in the near future. And so that is really a game changer because it opens up many more electric vehicle charging customers to a network that is already really reliable, really well designed, and really well developed and run. Chelan PUD's DC fast charging rate, we support expansion of services by these companies by providing a sustainable and predictable rate. They're set so that they know when there'll be increases, and that provides certainty with regards to companies coming in and understanding what their rate will be.
So all of our current fast chargers are DC chargers?
That's really the definition of a fast charger, is that direct current. And so they're going to be anywhere. There is one small one in town. I wouldn't consider it really a fast charger, but it's considered that because it is a direct current. Most of them are much bigger, like the Teslas, the Charging America, where you're looking at 100, 150 kW capabilities to charge. So big, a lot bigger. So those are, yeah, that's generally what a fast charger is. And so At this time, staff doesn't believe that directly competing in this market space is in the best interest of our customers. So going out and building DC fast chargers, when looking at all of these other moving parts that are going on, one is that data shows that even the current fast chargers aren't fully utilized. And so there's space there for the ones that are here to grow. Plus, our DC fast charging rate provides the district with 10 to 12 cents a kWh revenue without the O&M costs. And so we're already, the way the rate is set up, we're already receiving revenues in that number. And the O&M costs can be a challenge. A lot of the, this isn't a plug, but there's a lot of non-Tesla chargers that are down a lot of the times. And then you have to have people coming in to fix them. You have to have the right networks put in place for maintenance and all of those sorts of things. And so you'll see that, and this has been a lot in the news across the country, maybe not our area specifically, but in other areas of the country, where having them up and reliable can be challenging at times. And so with the exception of the kind of the leading one who has spent a lot of time and effort in this. And so that's why, as the staff looks at it, our recommendation would be to not try to compete with these entities that are already have their business models and core capabilities working on these things. Stop there for a second.
I guess mine's a legal question. When it comes to rates, how much flexibility do we have in I guess setting the rate that's above our normal our cost? I was under the assumption that we have to stay, you know, at a certain level, what it costs, and we can't really say, well, we're going to jack it up. It costs us 5 cents a kilowatt. We're going to jack it up to 10 or whatever. I don't know.
I'll take the first stab at it, and Eric can correct me when I'm wrong.
What's our limitation?
My understanding, at least when it comes to rates, is, as Eric mentioned earlier, the board has discretion to set what those rates are, subject to the statutory standard, which I'm going to forget all of the specific language, but essentially it has to be reasonable, non-discriminatory, applies the same equally to different classes of individuals. And so as long as you meet those reasonable requirements, then it's good. Now, could, in theory, if you were to change the rate and somebody were to think that it was not reasonable, they could challenge that in court. But the general requirement is one of reasonableness on behalf of the commission.
And the district determines what is reasonable.
That's correct. And
it's challenged in court.
That's true. And it has to be on a reasoned basis. And that's why there's a lot of work that goes into creating a rate and justifying the rate, the costs associated with it, and ensuring that the district is recovering something that's reasonable. Yes.
Do we have any examples that we can go to? Are there any examples we can actually go to and say, well, this is being done here?
Well, I'm sure that if these kinds of rates are proliferating across the country, then we could certainly take those as examples of what people are charging. Everyone's system is a little bit different, but yeah, you could.
All right, everybody's different based on their costs. That's
right. I think part of the one of the reasons we do an extensive outreach is, to Daniel's point, want to get input from customers on the reasonableness side of it. And And I'd say you're looking for an example, I'd say the process we used to get to the 10 to 12 cents for the fast charging was certainly incorporating those full costs that you were talking about,
to
incorporate the full costs of our infrastructure to provide those. And we did get a fair amount of public comment on those, and that was incorporated in the decision. So I think the process is built so that you would get that input if you decide you want to go through a rate setting process for different elements of electric vehicle charging.
Yeah. Okay.
So just the last couple under EVs, looking at the standard desires to accelerate third party investment in electric vehicle charging. While participating in the Washington Clean Fuels Program may provide an opportunity to support customers wanting to invest in vehicle electrification infrastructure. And what's meant by this is that those that are putting in the fast charging stations will have the ability to generate credits from that. Additionally, going back to our own fast charging rate, it's a sustainable and predictable rate. And I believe that is also something that would help third parties want to invest. And as we've seen, we have, there's two that are looking seriously, or two additional stations that are seriously looking at being added into our county. And I know there's some other ones that we've heard as well. And so I think that we're situated in a position that we are supporting customers who would want to do this. And then finally, the last one is under the appropriately recovering the costs. Back in 2022, we implemented a DC fast charging rate that recovers the additional impacts of adding those types of charging stations to our PUD electrical system. And then we're also looking at assessing managed charging options that could help customers reduce peak loads. So a lot of times that it might not be the energy being used, but it might be the impact of the peak, and so we want to look at, are there ways to manage that charging with customers in order to reduce those peaks and to minimize impacts. And so we have work ongoing with that portion of it right now as well. That really kind of falls under the next one, which is demand response. So we're able to go and help or work with customers on shaving those peaks. There are two areas under two areas under the DR standard. One is looking at each electric utility will promote the demand response and demand flexibility practices by its various sectors. Chelan PUD, we believe Chelan PUD already has the authority to do these things, to promote these activities, and so there's no need to accept a standard associated with it. We are also currently evaluating demand response and demand flexibility practices and programs, working with a consultant right now on potential program designs, looking at what that value is to the utility and to our customers. And voluntary programs will be made. We believe that we can make voluntary programs available to customers as they make economic sense for all involved. So. And then the next one is under the rate recovery associated with demand response. And first, the rate recovery standard is not applicable unless the standard requiring promotion of the DR is adopted. And so if we don't adopt the first one, the second one's not there. But also, the district currently does offer time of use rates for some Schedule 30 customers. And if it makes economic sense and the board would like to do so, the district can consider offering alternative rate mechanisms in the future to other customers as well. And so that still is out there and still available for the board. And so there's a lot of verbiage, a lot of information, a lot of text, which I do apologize for, but I really need to make sure that we got the right language down so that as we're working through this process. But in conclusion, not adopting the standard does not hinder the board's ability to implement any or all of the actions identified in the 2021 IIJA. And in fact, by not adopting the standards, that increases increases flexibility in that you can look at things even outside those standards. And by not adopting the standards provides the board with flexibility to make decisions based on information and timeline that makes sense for the district's customer owners. So when does it make sense for us? When does it make sense for our customers? What do the economics look like? We have, as everybody's aware, we have a different economic system or business model than many utilities out there. And so how do we bring these programs online that help support all of our goals and objectives of our utility and our customers? So we think that by not adopting those standards, the board has greater flexibility to be able to do that.
So Andrew, that's coming up in November for us to make that official.
It's actually October. I'll show you on the next slides. So this is my proposed plan.
I apologize.
No, not at all. So this is proposed. So we could change that later if you would like to. But proposed, what we've done the first step here. We've previewed staff recommendations. We have a discussion of our standards consideration, and then we haven't quite done it yet, but like to set a public hearing date. And our recommendation or our proposal is to set it for September 18th, so 2 weeks from today. That would provide September 5th through the 18th for a public notice and comment period. And we would notice those through our normal public hearing venues and channels. And then October 2nd, we would come back. So we would have the September 18th would be the public hearing, provide board with time to consider any public comments that came in during that time period. And then 2 weeks later, bring it a resolution back to the board for consideration on what the standard should look like. And so that provides time for the board to consider what was commented on and see if there's any other questions. And then it also, by doing it early October, if there is some greater comments or there is additional information the board would like to have, we're not pushing up against that November deadline yet. We still have, you know, two or three different board potential board meetings that we could put in place. So, yep.
You answered all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Andrew? Thank you. Good presentation.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I really appreciate the breakdown.
Yes.
And your justification.
Thank you. And I forgot to mention, of course, with anything like this, there's a team involved. And our team on this coming up with recommendations and working through all this information was Charles Von Reese from our legal, Brett Hammond, strategic finance, Kathy Melton with customer utilities, Jim White from my team, and then myself. So they did a lot of work, a lot of thinking on that. So
I think it's going to be fascinating to see what that change, the impact of the change for non-lead cars to jump onto that national network.
Yeah.
What that's going to do, I mean, if I was in that lead car, I might not like that because everybody else gets to jump on and I have to wait my turn. And
yeah.
I think it's going to be fascinating to watch that unfold, but I would you agree with this that I think it's just going to blossom and bloom and burst open?
Yeah. If the question is, though, the leading manufacturer, Tesla, the leading charging stations. And so the question is that, does that look like that's going to just cause growth to occur more quickly? I think it will, because a lot of I think the issues with electric vehicles right now is range anxiety and finding a good, reliable charging network. They have one, and they're building it out. I mean, they're looking at adding one up in Coles Corner.
That was my next question.
Right, and so I would imagine them building this out, and especially when they can receive low carbon fuel standard credits. I mean, across the nation, they receive a lot of revenue from different low-carbon fuel standard policies, and so that will continue to go as well. And so, yeah, I agree. I think it'll start. I think it'll cause a trajectory to increase.
Yeah, I think
so. Exciting.
Yeah, so exciting. We got it. We got right. Never had that closing of a presentation before, but I kind of like it.
that's the introductory music of the new office service center editor.
Andrew, I heard somewhere where definitely the infrastructure needs to increase if we're going to do this electric vehicle. And I heard somewhere where they said people that have electric car, the best time they have is 10 minutes after they fully charge, and the rest of the time they're looking for another place. You know, where am I going to charge? So
I don't own one yet. Just, you know, because personally for family needs, I still need something to, you know, hauls four kids in a horse trailer. And so for us, that's not out there yet.
Well, not yet.
But, you know, for a second, third car, you know, I think they're coming on, especially in our, like, I think it was Commissioner McKenna mentioned the our rate and, you know, how that could drive, you know, adoption. So, and that's going to be a challenge. I mean, we're situated well. I think a lot of other areas are going to be challenged by it because they're also in a lot of other areas are being challenged to get off natural gas for their heating. And so they're going to be having electrification of their winter loads along with EVs and all those sorts of things. And but, you know, we're situated differently, which is nice.
I'm putting a charger in my garage right now. I don't have a car, but I'm building a garage, so I'm planning on that. But the point I was trying to make is I think what this does is put more emphasis on our work for substation distribution planning. You know, we've got to be paying attention to that. And So I really appreciate staff's work. Very informative presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I look forward to the public hearing and comment period so that I can, and I need to continue to learn and get my understanding, you know, as we prepare to make that decision. But this was very helpful.
Great.
Thank you.
Of course, if there's any questions in between presentations, let me know and we'll get information, any information you need. So we'll give it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Item 5 on the agenda is public comment. And since we're at a, we've had two significant presentations, I'll give, if there's any member of the public present, I don't happen to see any other than media. So public comment. I think we've, Kirk and I discussed beforehand that we just would move right through the agenda. And so the next item on the business agenda is the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Regular agenda, item 8.
I'll take it from here.
Okay.
Agenda item number 8 is a resolution I'd like to invite Ron Slabaugh up for. It's a resolution adopting and establishing a uniform method of charging in lieu of assessment for properties requesting connection to local utility districts and rescinding and superseding all prior resolutions to the extent they are inconsistent herewith. This is an item that Ron came to us a couple of meetings ago and introduced and indicated be coming back with a resolution. So here we are. Ron?
Thank you, Kirk. Ron Slabaugh, Water Wastewater Manager. As Kirk mentioned, presented two board meetings ago on some of the issues associated with charge in lieu of assessments with our local utility districts. And we recommended a path forward to establish consistent methodologies for those charges utilizing a declining balance approach. Now we've gone and since that meeting prepared this resolution that we believe accomplishes that. And it, along with that approach, we feel that it's, unlike our existing practice, it's fair and equitable. It's easy to explain and for our customers to understand. We believe that it will encourage new connections to those systems that we already have. Overall, I think it'll enhance the customer service, the customer experience is in the best, and it is in the best interest of our customer owners. We, since that last meeting, we haven't received any comment from the public, so we're here with this resolution for your approval. Any questions or comments?
Commissioners? I'd like to make a comment that the chart that was attached to the resolution is one of those things where a picture is worth a thousand words. It really lays it out very, very nicely what this means. So thank you for that additional attachment.
I agree, and thanks for the feedback.
Hey, Ron, I think one of the things that would be really important to point out to the board, because it is part of the resolution, is the, any action taken consistent with the recommendation on the resolution is the discharge of that $350,000 repayment. It'd be good to speak to that if you can.
Sure, for Sleepy Hollow LED number 5. And that's something that I understand was specific to Sleepy Hollow and that the district in part funded the Sleepy Hollow LED with that $350,000. And the approach, the charge in lieu approach established for Sleepy Hollow, I understand, was intended. The idea was there was to help recoup that $350,000. Well, that certainly hasn't occurred, and we don't anticipate that it will occur given the passage of time and the exorbitant cost to currently connect to that Sleepy Hollow system. So as Kirk mentioned, this does discharge that $350,000 contribution that the district made towards that improvement back in that 1997-1998 time frame.
Hey, commissioners, any additional questions or comments? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve resolution number 8.
I would make such a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 8. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks for your hard work.
Yeah. Manager items.
Got two items. For the first one, I'd like to invite Kristen Lodge up to give you information on the upcoming Salmon Festival.
Woo-hoo.
Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today. Kristen Lodge, Visitor Services Manager out at Rocky Beach Discovery Center. I'm here today to talk about the Wenatchee River Salmon Festival. The 31st annual event is coming up in September the 21st through 23rd out at Rocky Reach Dam. This three-day outdoor education event celebrates the return of salmon into our river system, and it connects people with nature. Tons of hands-on educational activities for people of all ages. The theme this year is Salmon People. Thursday and Friday are two school days, and we're really excited to share that we're bringing back the community day on Saturday. Last year's school days brought 1,500 third and fourth graders from 75 classes in 34 schools from 5 counties.
Wow.
And we're anticipating a visitation on Saturday this year from 2,000 to 5,000 people. So it's a really exciting event. In addition to hosting, we also lead the planning for the River Ramble portion of the event, where we invite our visitors to immerse themselves in a Native American village and a cultural intertribal experience. We're hosting 40 tribal educators and exhibitors from 13 tribes around the Pacific Northwest. In addition, the event brings together natural resource educators and specialists from around the Pacific Northwest to offer opportunities for guests to learn about fish and wildlife, healthy habitats, and watersheds. It's really an honor to participate in this event, and it's important to the district in three ways. It's an opportunity to fulfill our education interpretive program in the district's HPMPs. It supports the district's strategy to enhance the quality of life in Chelan County by sharing programs that are the benefits of public power. And it provides a really great opportunity to partner with other agencies who support the event, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Reclamation, and the Bonneville Power Administration, among dozens of others. I want to make a quick note about safety. I probably wowed you with some of the numbers that we're anticipating for the event. Last year, we welcomed 2,000 people on site on Thursday and Friday. Each of those individuals crossed the train tracks. They enter through our guard post. And we were challenged by directing a mix of private vehicles and buses who were both dropping off and parking throughout the event, and then helping our guests navigate through our 17-acre site, all which was set up with our educational activities. We manage the site safety in multiple ways. We have a huge volunteer force. We partner with the district's security team to bring in extra force and increase their numbers. And we're bringing in the Wenatchee Valley Tech Center's criminal justice students. They roll in on a bus with about 30 students who help throughout the event direct site safety and ensure our visitors are safe throughout the event. We had a teacher comment last year that the drop-off, they said, was like a well-choreographed ballet. So we're setting a high bar, but we're going to strive for that again this year. I'd love to invite the board to join us on Saturday, September 23rd, for Community Day. We'll be open from 10 to 5. And any staff listening, I'd love to invite them to consider volunteering to help us. Any questions? Kristen, I have a comment, as always, it seems. I recently went to Libby Dam. Susan James says hello.
Oh, good.
She speaks really highly of both you and Bob, and there were others in the dam tour. So she was giving accolades of our visitor center and recommended that for those who hadn't been to Rocky Reach to please do so.
Oh, wonderful. The great partnership. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cool. Thank you.
It's I really appreciate the efforts going into safety. You know, there's so many pluses having it there. I've heard from schools, it's closer, it's more centered than up in Leavenworth, the fish hatchery. We love that, and yet I can see the consequences for that benefit. Is there any talk to that? Is there hope for that to continue with us, or are they moving it back, or what's the latest on that, or am I not supposed to ask that?
Oh, no. Let me look into my crystal ball. Yeah. No, I'm glad you did. The construction that's going on at the hatchery that prevents them from hosting this event is anticipated to be about a 5-year construction site.
Oh, okay. And I hear that construction every morning at 6 o'clock.
Shoot. I anticipate that we'll revisit it at the end of that 5 years.
Thank you for that reminder.
Sure.
I couldn't remember. I knew there was some construction.
We'll arm wrestle over it.
Yeah. It's a good opportunity for us, though, to showcase the Discovery Center. And great job. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kristen. And I really appreciate her and the team's work on the reason we did not do the community event on Saturday last year was I decided we weren't ready for the safety side of it. It was short notice for us to scramble to try and figure out how to do the school days last year. And I was not sure how we were going to accommodate the, you know, it's much different with school buses and carpools for the school day. And then you double the amount of people that would show up the next day, all in 2 or 3 people per car. And so I really appreciate the work that Chris and her team did to get ready for this and allow us to do this. And I feel much better about it. Next item was wanted to just share we are on track for the Service Center grand opening on October 7th. And it's scheduled from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So we're excited to share with the public what the new service center is going to look like, at least the part that's done, and then they'll be able to see the part that's under construction in the back at the same time. But hope we get a great turnout from the public. We'll have behind-the-scenes tours available. We'll also have a commemorative passport for any of the kids that show up where they can collect stamps at several PUD stations chance to win a prize there. And then we'll have some entertainment in the plaza out in front where the public get a good look at what that plaza will look like, even though it's not completely done yet. So look forward to that. A great opportunity for the public to come walk through the building and take a look at what this new service center is all about on the 7th of October.
All the
I hope so.
Manager items?
That is.
We're down to commissioner travel. We're efficient today.
Good job. So I feel like we're at the end of the year already. Mm-hmm. So we have a little bit of travel coming up. Commissioners Arsenault and Berggren are traveling for Waputa, coming up in Richland. 13th through the 15th. Commissioner Allen is traveling about the same time for Power X. Commissioner Smith and Allen, Waputa Water Workshop towards the end of the month. Commissioner Arsenault, Waputa and Olympia, October 19th.
October 19th. Is that
that's
just
budget?
That's a budget meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, and if we don't know about it, we're not on it.
That's why I was asking.
And October 26th, I have Commissioner Arsenault traveling for Energy Northwest. Is anyone else planning to attend that?
And that is the Public Power Forum.
Yes.
It's a good event. I can't make it. I know that.
Okay.
I will get back to you on that.
Okay. Commissioner Berggren?
Oh,
Well, put me down for it. But
okay. Commissioner McKenna?
No.
Thank you. And the last thing I have is Waputa in November, but I won't stare you down yet for that one. Unless you know you want to go, I'll write it down.
I will be attending Waputa this month, but by Zoom.
Oh, okay.
And do you have to write? I think I'm all registered.
I'll go in and look. I canceled your in-person registration,
yeah.
But I'll check, make sure you're registered for Zoom.
And go ahead and put me down for the PUTA meeting in
for
November.
Zoom?
Yeah. No, not Zoom.
Oh, I do have you down.
Okay.
With a one-night hotel in the pool car.
Yes.
And that's in November?
No, I mean, I'm talking about November.
Oh, I'm sorry. November.
You went back. Yeah.
Do you have to register, like, on the Zooms? I didn't realize.
I don't know. I mean, there's an option.
I just Zoom in.
You probably don't have
okay.
to.
No. No, you don't.
I don't have to.
Yeah, I'll be doing at least part of the November meeting, but I'll get back to you on what I need for hotel reservation.
Okay. Someone else say November?
Yeah, I'm going to do November.
What are the dates on November?
November 15, 17.
Yeah.
I have it down. I guess I'll be attending.
Okay.
That's in Olympia.
That's in Olympia. It's the last meeting of the year since the annual conference has been
moved to April.
Yeah.
Lisa, will you add me to November as well?
I will.
Thank you.
Is there anything else I can take care of for you?
Thank you, Lisa.
Mm-hmm. We're all good. Okay. Let me know if there's anything that you think of later.
Well, just if you would just automatically put me on a pool car for those meetings. Yeah, you can just automatically do that. I'm going to ask for it anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So, commissioners, we're down to commission items. We do have a motion we need to pass in addition to any other commission items we may bring forward. Maybe we could take care of the motion first, if that would meet your approval. Somebody would need to read that.
I would move to approve the modified regular board meeting schedule for calendar year 2024. To accommodate holidays and industry meetings by moving the following meetings: the January 2nd, 2024 meeting to January 8th, 2024, January 15th, 2024 meeting to the January 22nd of 2024. All meetings to be held in the service center, I should say the new service center, boardroom at 203 Old Station Road, Wenatchee, Washington, and all to commence at 10 a.m. unless further modified by future board action.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to move the two January meetings. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Are there other commissioner items today? Hearing up, is there any follow-up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings?
I have no new updates on delegated action items from prior meetings and did not capture any new ones from today.
Okay. Is there any additional public comment? Any other matters that come, a business to come before us before we recess for lunch? I think rather than start an executive session, we would recess. Any other matters come before us? Okay, well, in that case, Daniel, thank you for sitting in today. By the way, it's a really nice-looking tie.
Thank you.
Eric never wears one.
What? If you'd like to read the executive session reason, then we can come back at 1 o'clock in the executive session.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Recess. In that case, we will come
back at 1 o'clock in executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of decreased price as authorized by the RCWs for approximately 90 minutes.
I was going to change that to 60.
Okay, for approximately 60 minutes. In that case, we will now recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock. It's September 5, 2023. The Chelan County Public Utility District Commission has been meeting in executive session for an hour. During that time, no votes were taken, no decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.